The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Claypo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I am Dr. Josh Claypo, and today, Alex, we got more emails, lots of emails, so many damn emails. People are listening and they have got questions. And what they're basically telling us, I think, is, yeah, you all are great, but you're not answering my question. So I'm going to ask it to you. And I want to let everybody know, if you're listening to this, you absolutely can email us any question you have about business, technology, solutions, any of that. The email address is info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Again, that's info@TonyCurryRadio.net. All right, we got a couple more emails. You ready to jump into them?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we can do more than one per episode, but we'll see.
I know. You know the problem with this is, I swear to you, this is an academic thing. I know you and I both made pivots into the business world, but I think what happens is when we get together, we kind of go academic geeky, where it's, yeah, I'm tenured and we'll just like look at this theoretically. And we really don't have deadlines to meet other than, you know, if we go over on the taping or the live, it's fine. That's what happens. Like, we just shoot the shit. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah. No. Well, it is part of the solution too, though. I think we shoot the breeze pretty well.
That's good. All right. So here's one that we got. Let's see. It says, I listen to your show and you're constantly, actually, I emphasize that. I don't know, almost a negative. You're constantly talking about strategy and culture. How does that work in a business like mine, where we're growing and we're growing rapidly? We don't have a lot of money or a ton of money or resources. We just keep adding people. What kind of strategy should I have besides just making it? And this is a great one, right? Because, you know, on the one hand, this is fantastic. You're adding people, you're growing, you're productive. I'm sure you've seen this. I see this all the time. The onboarding, when you're not a huge company, the onboarding is very often the first thing to fall apart because you're so busy just hiring people and trying to make sales and trying to close deals. And there's this balance that you have to make as leadership in the company between how much are we going to take the time to instill strategy, to instill culture, to onboard people versus, hey, you're smart, you're talented, just, you know, pay attention, go do the sales, go do the work, you'll figure it out. What are your thoughts about that? And what are the implications, you think, for either being, you know, heavy onboarding or not heavy enough?
You know, look, I'm a big believer in a pretty fair amount of onboarding. You know, I've just actually been onboarding some new salespeople. And I got to tell you, it was a really time consuming process. It's taken up a ton of my time. And, yep. And you know, so one of the things we did to scale it was to create some formal materials. So instead of me getting up on the whiteboard and explaining, you know, here's what we do at Adaptogen, here's our cool fabric integration product, and here's how it works and all that. You know, we recorded a lot of that while we were doing it last year. And so that really, you know, that really helped from an onboarding standpoint. But let's face it, it's still a very time consuming process. And, you know, the funny thing about onboarding people is that, you know, in your own head, you get what you're talking about. And when you're trying to teach someone something, there's almost this human nature to say something and then expect that they're going to remember 100% of it. And you know, as an academic and as a part-time college professor, you know, you learn very quickly, you've just got to repeat yourself over and over and over again for it to really sink in for people. Right. So that's what can take a lot of the time, is just the repetitive nature of it. My operating assumption when I'm teaching people things is they're going to remember maybe 25% of what I told them. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to tell it to them at least four times. And it's usually five or six times before they're really going to get it, before they can really internalize it. But I'm a believer in that, right? I want to make sure that when you hire people and you're bringing them on board, that you give them the tools that they need, you give them the education and the background that they need in order to be successful. Otherwise, they're going to spend way more of their own time trying to work that out, and they're going to be far less productive, at least over the first, you know, 4 to 6 months that they're on the job. So I'm a big believer. You know, I don't want to like take people and put them in class for a month or something. And they do that at some companies, but I think being able to spend that first 30 days, you know, bringing people up to speed, and then also giving them some of that on the job training as well, I think that's important as well.
Yeah. I mean, that takes a ton of my time. Onboarding takes a ton of my time. Creating materials takes a ton of my time. I can't offload it to somebody else. You know, how am I going to do this and still make the sales? I think some of it also is a framing of it and a scalability or as our dear friend Jamie likes to talk about a minimal viable product, right? Because I hear this all the time that this does take a ton of time. And I don't have the time to make the resources and make the materials and spend the time. But the question becomes, does it need to be all or none? Can you take some of the time? Can you take your schedule and instead of, you know, taking off 3 days to onboard somebody, which by the way, this is my experience when onboarding, both as in someone being onboarded and someone onboarding, don't take all day to onboard somebody. Like give them multiple parts of the day because they're not paying attention if it's all day long. But I guess the question really is, can you scale it back where you're not just throwing them in, but you are giving them an introduction to the business? And the other piece that I think is important, and I think this is not always addressed, factoring in their relative productivity during ramp up period. Now I hear people say it all the time. I hear company leaders say, yeah, we know they're not going to be productive instantly. Yeah, we know there's a ramp up time. But I almost feel like it's not calculated. You know, it's like literally not to the point of, I expect about 50% productivity in the first 6 weeks and then jumping up to, you know, 70, 80% productivity. I know that's a guesstimate, but I feel like you really need to do that so that you can gauge how much ramp up time you're going to have and what you're going to get out of it. So I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
No, you have to be smart about it. And I think it's very dependent on the role as well. And I think people have sort of misconceptions about how quickly you can get people up to speed, right? So let's take sales, for instance. Getting a new sales rep in your company up to speed and what I'll call productive, which is to say prospecting, truly doing their own prospecting and selling, you know, that's going to take anywhere from 3 to 6 months realistically. And that's true across almost every company out, even people that have sold similar products or similar things, even if you hire them from a competitor, there's still going to be a pretty significant ramp up period. But I do believe in that kind of hybrid model, right? I'm not a believer in taking people and sticking them in a class for a month long, you know, session, because you're right. You know, all the academic research that's been done on learning says that most people tune out after about 45 minutes.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's pretty much the magic number. It varies a little bit by person, but after about 45 minutes, you reach this sort of point of diminishing returns where you can spend more time trying to teach them stuff. But, you know, so that's one of the big things is, you know, how do you break it up into bite-sized chunks? And so that's one of the things we did. So instead of recording an hour-long video of me droning on at the whiteboard about a particular topic, we broke it up into pieces. And those pieces are anywhere from 3 minutes long to 15 minutes long, but they can be consumed in these sort of bite-sized pieces. And that lets people consume it and then actually think about it before they move on to the next piece, right? So it's not this just constant barrage of information. So we found that works pretty well. You know, but I think beyond the onboarding piece of it, I mean, yeah, that's hard. I think there's a lot of good strategies, but you know, when I look at this question too, you know, it's sort of, you know, what do I do from a strategy and culture standpoint? And I think the culture aspect of it is interesting. And, you know, we've talked about this on previous shows. I spent about 6.5 years of my life working at Red Hat Software. And you know, an amazing culture there, open source software company. And you know, and I sat down when I actually did a case study on Red Hat when I was doing my doctoral dissertation. And what was interesting is, you know, I would talk to the leaders of the company, and it was amazing how much emphasis they put on culture. And I said, well, you know, look, I get that. I get that maintaining a culture is important. But, you know, what they told me, and this was the really interesting part, because when I started there, there was maybe 1,000 people. And when I left there, I think there were about 6,000. So, you know, basically adding a company's worth of people every year. And the person who ran, you know, people development, the chief people officer, sat me down. And she said to me, she said, look, the challenge in maintaining a culture when you're growing is that by definition, the vast majority of the people in your company, they've just come from a different culture, right? So you end up in a situation, if you're growing rapidly, if you're doubling the size of your employee base every year, by definition, at least half of those people are not from your culture. They came from somebody else's culture. So being able to not only emphasize and invest in making sure that people are on the same page when it comes to the company culture, but also figuring out, how do you measure culture? How do you measure the aspects of your culture that you want to reinforce? And how do you know, am I getting better? Is the culture improving, or is it actually regressing? Is it being diluted by all these brand new people that I'm bringing in to a point where there is no culture? It's this amalgamation of 50 different cultures. So that's tricky, right? That's one of the hard parts. And you know, this question, it's like, we're growing, we're hiring a lot of people. So from a cultural standpoint, you've got to make sure that you put an emphasis on that. And very, very few companies do, right? They'll kind of gloss over it. You know, here's the 1 hour session on our values and all that other stuff. But making the right investment, if you really care about your culture, and you want to maintain it and you want to improve upon it, making sure that you, during that onboarding process, and then also as you interact with people over the course of time, being able to make the right investments to reinforce that culture is critical, because again, the vast majority of your people are coming from a different outside culture, and they have different ideas, potentially different ways of thinking. So being able to, I hate to use the term, but like assimilate them into your culture, that's really, really important. And it also starts in the hiring process. You want to hire people, and I see too few organizations that do this. You've got to be able to hire people that you think are going to fit into your culture. So that's an adaptogen. That's one of the key criteria we look at is, yeah, there's skills, there's experience, there's, you know, the personal characteristics. But one of the big questions we ask ourselves is this person going to fit well into our culture?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the culture word. I really do. I love it. I mean, I love it, but I hate it at the same time, because it is one that is daunting. It can be, you know, establishing a culture, or refining a culture, or introducing people to a culture in an organization feels enormous. In many ways, it is enormous. I've seen companies try to standardize it, you know, with materials, which I think is okay. You know, what's our culture about, and mission statements. But I do think that, like any human endeavor, the way we become acculturated into an environment is, A, it's over time. B, it's via social modeling. So we have to see other people and what they're doing and what the consequences are in order for us to learn what works here and what doesn't. And a lot of that is the culture. And when I say what works and what doesn't, it's everything from, do we eat lunch together? Do we not eat lunch together? Do we dress casual? Do we not dress casual? You know, dedication to excellence beyond, you know, from my opinion, dedication to excellence, that's a stupid cultural norm. And the reason I say that is every company should be dedicated to excellence.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's nothing new.
Yeah. That doesn't help. And so I do think that if, you know, to our emailer, you don't have to become overwhelmed that you need an endless supply, endless amount of resources, financial and people resources, to create strategy and culture. What you do have to do as a small business owner or smaller is you still have to pay attention to how are people interacting with one another? What are the words that are said? What do the interactions look like and how are people performing? How does that match up with what, you know, if it's small enough, what you have in your head, and not brush that off of the to-do list. And I think I heard, that's what I heard from you. Whether you are at a giant company or a small company, it is a dedication to something that doesn't necessarily take a ton of human resources, but it may take your resources as a leader of a company in terms of your priorities and what you're paying attention to.
Oh yeah. And no question about it. And I think that is, you got to strike the right balance. Right. And, I don't like the culture word either, because it has so many different meanings and connotations to different people. And there's always that fine balance. That fine line you have to walk between having a diverse culture, that's really important, but at the same time, having a core set of values and a core set of principles that we all agree upon. And there's no deviation from those. So I think, you know, as an organization, and I think to answer this listener's question, maybe a little more directly, you know, you've got to really be able to decide what those things are, and you've got to be explicit about them. I walk into so many companies, I'm like, what do you guys stand for? What are your you know, top five values that just aren't negotiable? And very few companies can tell you that, right? Or if they can, they're just platitudes, right? They're not actually real. We don't live them. It's here's the PowerPoint deck on our guiding principles or whatever. And they just don't live them, right? And I've seen that happen way too many times. But I think the same thing is true of strategy, because that was the other question that we got from this listener was, you know, what do I do about strategy? And here's the funny thing, right? A lot of people, and at the end of this, it says, what kind of strategy should I have besides just making it? And I'll tell you this, you know, strategy is the most important thing when you're doing well. And a lot of people think, well, no, strategy is supposed to get you to the point where you are doing well. And there's some truth to that, but the danger you run into with strategy and this sort of, well, we're just making it kind of mentality. Yeah, we're growing and things are great. If you don't have a strategy, that's the time to put one into place, right? Because those things aren't going to go well forever. Right? The world changes, the market changes, everything is going to change over time. You might be really successful this year and just have a disaster next year. So the trick is making sure that in the good times, you have a strong strategy and you develop a strong strategy so that you have the right direction that you're moving in, regardless of what's happening out in the market, regardless of those changes. And then you can adapt to those and adapt that strategy to those changes much more easily than if you really kind of were one of those companies that happened upon success and now you don't have any idea how to sustain that success. You don't have a strategy to sustain it. So I think there's a danger in that if you don't have that strategy in place.
You're listening to Adapter Parish on Tony Curry Radio. I'm Josh Klepo along with my friend, Dr. Alex Hubline. And remember, today we are answering emails. You can always email us your questions at info@tonycurryradio.net. That's info@tonycurryradio.net. Now, Alex, I'm going to take the time that we have left for a fun one. And this email says, I like this one. When is it time to quit? I hate my job. I'm going to pause there for a second. This is me. So we've heard that before, but this is one that I thought was really great. I hate my job, but I am a leader in this company. I'm one of the top executives. When is it time to just say, and I quote, screw it? I really like that because, you know, we always hear about people quitting and we hear about, you know, you got to find the right match for you and you need to, you know, it's not always the right environment and it's time to move on. But I think one of the things that's really unique is how do you do that? When do you move on when you are leading the company? Maybe you're the founder, maybe you're the president, maybe you're one of the key executives, or even if you have a smaller business, maybe you're one of the key people that drive this company forward, but you've gotten to the point where you need to leave. And let me just put the caveat on it. It's not necessarily a heated, you know, blow up, run out the door. how do you make that decision that you have to put you first? And I see a lot of my own clients in this, Alex. A lot of my clients struggle with loyalty to the company versus loyalty to themselves. And, you know, my advice is always this: at some point, you're going to be put up against those two things. And to be honest with you, at some point, you're going to have to decide, do you choose yourself and your own well-being over the people that work for you? And I can't tell you exactly when, but I can tell you that you should choose your own well-being over the people that work for you if your well-being is being, you know, pummeled so much that you're not living a fulfilled life. Not an easy decision to make. What are your thoughts?
Oh, no, look, I totally agree with you. And because here's the downside to it, right? I mean, you're in a job you hate. And I think the first thing you got to figure out is why you hate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's the old saying that people don't leave companies, they leave people. So a lot of times when people hate their jobs, it's because of the people they're interacting with. It could be their boss, could be their peers. But that the first thing you got to figure out is, why do I hate my job so much? And are there things I can do to improve the circumstances that I'm in? So that's, I think, the first step, right? Second step is, you know, if you've come to the conclusion that, hey, this isn't what I want to do. This isn't what I want to do with my life, or this just isn't the right company for me to do. I actually like what I do, but this is the wrong company for me. You know, then you've got to really take a hard look in the mirror and say, you know, is this a temporary situation? Because let's face it, every job has a bunch of stuff nobody likes to do. You know, my job as president of a company, there's all kinds of stuff I have to do on a daily basis where I'm like, oh, this is so boring, or like, oh, I've got to go approve these invoices or whatever, right? And it's just, you just go, oh my God. Like, I have this special part of my week where I block it out to do paperwork. And I hate paperwork. I mean, I hate it with a vengeance and a passion. But you know, there's temporary aspects of a job. There's aspects of a job you may not like, but when you really sit down and look yourself in the mirror and say, you know, am I happy and fulfilled in what I'm doing right now? And there's a definitive no, well, that's probably the time to do something different. And you've got to prioritize yourself. You're totally right on that, because after you can pretend to do a job you hate for some period of time. Mm-hmm. But at some point, if you don't enjoy what you do for a living, I guarantee you, eventually you will not be any good at it, particularly yes. at an executive level. You will come across a time where you will say, wow, I'm actually doing a crappy job of my crappy job, right? And that's for sure when you know, if you start to see your own results in your productivity and your level of engagement, when that really starts dropping, that's when you've got to say, okay, it's time for a change. Because guess what? The company will probably make a change for you if you're not doing your job well. So better to get out ahead of that situation than be behind it, for sure.
So I see a lot of leaders who get to this choice point where they believe that, and with good reason, they don't want to let their people down. They don't want to let the people who have worked for them, who've worked with them for a number of years, they don't want to let them down. And sometimes I have to make some pretty strong statements by basically saying, you know, don't give yourself too much credit. You know, like, they like working for you, and they indeed like working at this company, but you don't like working at this company. That doesn't mean that if you leave necessarily that their lives will fall apart, because I do believe there is this sort of, I don't know what it is. It's almost this parental instinct, even with the greatest of intentions, call again, loyalty, where leaders feel like if I leave, their lives will be ruined. It's true in some cases, but in a lot of cases, they're still employed. They're still working their job. They may be sad to see you go, but they aren't going to fall off the face of the earth. And I think sometimes you have to do a check on your own ego a little bit and say, you know, if I move on because I need to, because I'm so burnt out or I don't like what this company represents, that doesn't mean that that is the same for every single person who works below me. I don't know. And that's a, It is a fine line, but it's a line that really plays to people's sort of false sense of power, even if they have the best of intentions.
No, you're right. But and you have to do it. And I've been in those circumstances, right? I mean, I've lived through this personally where. I've worked for companies where not only did I care about the people around me because I developed really strong relationships with them, but I actually hired a lot of them. And some of them were even friends of mine. So that's tough, that right? Because you have that loyalty to the company, you have the loyalty to the people, and then you got to have some loyalty to yourself. But again, I think it goes back to you're right. I mean, back when I had that sort of situation happen, I thought, oh, they're going to be doomed without me. Like I had this ridiculous sense of self-worth and value that just candidly wasn't there. And some of those people to this very day are still at those companies.
But you felt, but it was from a good place, don't you think? I mean, it was a power trip, but it was a power trip that I'm assuming you felt it in a caring way. Is that accurate?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. It was a very, very caring way.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the thing. That is the most interesting psychological piece that I see is you felt like their lives were going to be over if you left. And in that way, you can take a step back and you're like, what are you? You're not that great, you know? But you did it from a place not of conceit, not of just over ego, although it's a little bit of that. You did it because it's almost a savior complex. It's something that I cannot leave because they will not be able to go on. But you did it from a place of kindness. It's just that you kind of got beyond yourself is what I see happen. Yeah. And usually the reality check is you do leave and you find out, oh, look, they're doing quite well, you know?
Yeah, the vast majority of the time, I think that's the case, right? Yeah, people, you're right. It's coming from not from hubris, not from an aggrandized sense of self-worth or importance. I think a lot of times it is coming from that that sense of loyalty to people and caring about those people and what happens to them. And you just don't know what will happen to them. So I think there's that fear of the unknown. There's people you care about, people you've worked very closely with, your colleagues. There, some of them are friends in a lot of cases. And then, you know, you're kind of walking out the door. But, you know, I think it goes back to, it's very simple. If you hate your job, I guarantee you at some point you will reach a point where you don't do your job very well anymore. And that point will come a lot faster than most people realize. And then, you know, the company, whether, you know, it's the board of directors or it's your boss or whatever, they'll solve that problem for you. So better to solve it yourself and look to do something different or look to work for a different company than have it solved for you. And I think, you know, the other aspect to this that I think is interesting is that, you know, when you really look at people and you look at the relationships that people develop amongst themselves, I mean, there's one school of thought that says, now, when you go to work, you should be, you know, at arm's length with people and so on and so forth. And I don't buy that, you know. I think when you go to work, I mean, you're going to spend most of your life there. You're going to spend most of your waking hours at work doing your job. And if you're doing something that you truly hate, not only are you potentially going to destroy those relationships because people detect it pretty quickly when you hate your job, right? So you run the risk of destroying those relationships and also destroying your own mental health. And that affects not just you, it affects your family, it affects your other friends. So you really got to take a long, hard look at it and say, you know, do I really hate my job? And if so, what is it about it that I hate? And then can I do something about that? And if not, if you really hate your job, go find another one. Because, you know, look, there's plenty of companies out there hiring, right? We're one of the best job markets of all time. Companies are always looking for smart people. They're always looking for leaders, true leaders. So it's not like there aren't other alternatives, but I think people run into this trap where they think, well, this is the only place for me. And maybe I wouldn't do well at another company. The reality is, you know, I've worked for like 12 different companies over the last almost 33 years. You know, I've never run into a situation where I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing at this new company. It's scary. There's always that fear of the unknown. And I think that's what keeps people in jobs that they hate, is that fear of moving to something else. But I've yet to have a circumstance where I said, oh man, this is worse than what I left. You know, that's pretty much never happened to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm sorry. The only music song, the only song I can come to on this, I'm trying, just because I was trying to listen to you, was Take This Job and Shove It, which is so bad. And I'm so sorry. I just want to apologize to all of our listeners. I was trying The Great Unknown. I was thinking about some sort of a song with Abyss. I mean, I know as soon as we're over, I will figure out 16 more. Are there any stick songs that have to do with like quitting or leaving? Well, there's, oh no, there is. Oh my God. I'm going to make it even worse at the end. There is Babe, which talks about leaving.
And that's true. That's true.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Did I really
not have thought
it?
Of that one, but yeah, you just,
I just took it out. A power ballad from a classic rock. Oh my God. Okay. We're out of time and I got to stop, because I'm embarrassing myself and Dr. Hubline. You've been listening to Adapt or Perish. Remember, you can send us emails and we will answer your questions. The email address is info@tonycurryradio.net. That's info@tonycurryradio. I'll get it sometime. tonycurryradio.net. I want to thank everybody for joining us for Adapt or Perish. Please stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, because that's when you'll hear the next episode of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.